When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Incline Dodgers podcast is brought to you by TickPick. TickPick has you covered all season long if you're looking to support your Los Angeles Dodgers. Whether you're trying to go to Dodger Stadium or watch the Dodgers on the road, all you need to do is download the TickPick app to get the best Dodger ticket prices out there on the open market. And on top of that, there's no hidden fees. There's no service fees at checkout. You pay what you see. If you're trying not to just limit yourself to Dodgers baseball, I know NFL season's about a month away. Why don't you get your tickets right now to go see your favorite NFL team in action, wherever they may be.
Let's ride.
Time for the words that are recited before each and every game here at Dodger Stadium. Take it away, Finn.
It's time for Dodger baseball.
What's up, Dodger fans? Hope you're doing all well out there, and thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of the Incline Dodgers podcast presented by TickPick and FanSided. This is Kevin Klein speaking. Your Los Angeles Dodgers are 70-49 as they are on a four-game winning streak. The Dodgers are rolling right now, and this is exciting times because we've been waiting for this guy to return to the Dodgers lineup. 45 games he missed with the broken hand, and he made an immediate impact for the Dodgers when he got the start today in Milwaukee. We're talking about Mookie Betts. And what does Mookie Betts do in his first game back? He hits a home run, a two-run home run to give the Dodgers an early 2-0 lead, his 11th on the season. So more on Mookie in a second, but with Jake Reiner here and we're live, let's get some thoughts on how Jake's feeling.
Can you believe that with all of the injuries the Dodgers have had and just the feeling that maybe this season isn't going as well as we'd like it to, that they're still the best team in the National League? I mean, they have the best record in the National League by a half game. That's crazy to me. They haven't had a starting rotation for pretty much the entire season. And they haven't really gotten to see what this team is with how they built it in the offseason. I think that's kind of what the plan was for the trade deadline. Now, clearly they needed to get at least a starting pitcher, which they did in Jack Flaherty. But with Ahmed Rosario being DFA'd, just open up the spot for Mookie Betts, just kind of makes me think that this was their plan all along. Let's see what this team is made of for all of the things that the Dodgers paid for in the offseason. Let's see this team come to fruition and see if we can win a title, because quite frankly, if this team is all the way healthy, or at least, you know, 85-90% healthy, which is a lot, which is asking a lot, this team can win a World Series. Not easily, but don't you think with Mookie Betts coming back, Max Muncy coming back, Kershaw's back in the rotation, we got Walker Buehler on the way back, all these guys coming back, plus the additions of Jack Flaherty, Michael Kopech has been great. Don't you think that all things considered, this team has the best shot at winning a title when they're as healthy as they can be?
I mean, on paper, sure, but we know this never works out most of the time for the Dodgers. They've won one World Series since 2017, they've won one World Series. We can count 2017 if we want, but at the end of the day, they still have only won one title and they tend to have the best record every season. But yeah, as Jake said, the Dodgers now have the best record in the National League, and that's despite only beating the Philadelphia Phillies once this season. Half game ahead of the Phillies when they are losing the season series. They lost the season series to the Phillies. They're losing the season series to the Padres. They're down 3-7. And yet, here they are. They're in first place. It feels like the Diamondbacks and the Padres rarely lose these days. And despite the monumental amount of injuries that the Dodgers just continue to stockpile, They are 70-49, which is a really good record. And they're in the midst of probably their toughest stretch right now on the season. And it will only get a little lighter come September. So the Dodgers are in a good place. They just need to take care of business. And they've done so in the last four games when they swept the Pittsburgh Pirates, a much inferior team that they had to take care of business against at home. And they're off to a good start with the first win in this four-game series at Milwaukee. So, yeah, back to Mookie Betts. What a sensational return. You feel like when a guy misses that many games, 45 games to be exact, it's going to take him a minute to get his timing back. And that's certainly what it looked like in his first at-bat against Peralta. Peralta had Mookie literally swing and miss to the ground. But that second at-bat, his second chance, he literally hit a home run. And I didn't have that on my prediction. I didn't expect him to go yard this quick. But Mookie Betts picked up right where he left off, and he's just been incredible this season with runners in scoring position. He's hitting .382 with runners in scoring position. That's the clutch factor that this Dodgers lineup needs. And as we get a little more in depth with this lineup construction, I'm very happy with how the Dodgers lineup looked today.
Yeah, I mean, and before Mookie got hit with that pitch, he was on track to win MVP. I mean, that was the path he was on. So the fact that he has come back after missing 45 games, belts a home run to put the Dodgers on the board, that's huge. Also, not lost in all of this is the fact that they moved him back to right field, which thank God for that. That what were we doing trying to move him to shortstop? It seemed like, I don't know, Chris Rose made the point on his podcast that Mookie seemed a little irritable when interviewed about coming back and playing right field, talking about how he just wants to win, which we know that's the case. But it seemed as though he may have felt as though the Dodgers kind of dicked him around a little bit, which, you know, kind of is the case. I mean, they put him in a position to learn how to play shortstop for this team when he's supposed to be one of our leaders, one of our best players on the team, is just asinine. And given the fact that our outfield defense has been so poor without Mookie Betts out there, and then without Mookie Betts altogether, it's been atrocious out there. So adding him back to right field, he's a gold glover out there. That just upgrades the outfield defensively in a huge way.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. What's going on, BC? What's up, Justin Yamas, Maria G, Steve Moore, Alfonso? Thank you all for tuning in. Hit that like button. Hit that subscribe button. We'll get to some of your guys' questions and your takes later on in the show. But before the season even began, I'd never really understood why the Dodgers and Mookie Betts wanted to play the infield unless they were going to go out there and sign an elite shortstop or an elite infielder. As constructed, I felt the Dodgers always were most optimal with Mookie Betts in right field, because I'm not going to keep it quiet. I'm not a fan of Jason Hayward. He's been atrocious this season, and he was great last season. No doubt about it. I understand why they re-signed him. It seemed like he had unlocked something and had a resurgence in his career. But this season, Jason Hayward has been atrocious at the plate. Basically hitting .204, OPS below .700, not getting it done, has been hurt a lot. And if you have your choice between Mookie Betts in right field and Jason Hayward in right field, well, it's a no-brainer. You have Mookie Betts in right field. Center field, it's going to look like it's going to end up being Tommy Edman, which will be an interesting experiment and showcase as we get to that point. He's expected to return to the Dodgers and will debut with the Dodgers on Monday, a week from today. And then obviously Teoscar Hernandez will hold it down in left field. Defensively, that looks like a really good lineup. And you have Kevin Kiermaier as well, who can be a defensive replacement, maybe the best defensive center fielder in baseball. He's just made some insane catches already in Dodger blue and has done that throughout his career. But yeah, I really like the move of Mookie Betts in right field. It was just stupid. And we talked about it all year long of him playing shortstop. It was clearly out of position for him. He was not good there defensively. Now you've got him in right field where you know he's sensational. And you've got Miguel Rojas, who can now just comfortably be the Dodgers shortstop and has been a tremendous defender.
And bat, too. He's been great at the plate. I wonder what's going to happen, though, when Tommy Edman comes back and Max Muncy comes back. You have to think that someone like Nick Ahmed is going to be on the chopping block. they could send Páez down. Although Páez has been hitting, and he's hitting 350 in his last seven games. Mm-hmm. It's just unfortunate that he can't play center field. It is just it's atrocious watching him out there. And I wonder why they can't help him. I wonder why Dave Roberts can't help him. I mean, Dave Roberts was a pretty decent center fielder back in his day. Like, why can't we teach this kid how to play center field? He's got a rocket of an arm. He just can't read a fly ball to save his life. And it's costing the Dodgers a lot because you kind of want his bat in there. You don't want Kevin Kiermaier's bat in there. I mean, Kevin Kiermaier's hitting under 200 this year. So I get the defense, and maybe that's what they'll go with. I'm not sure what the postseason roster is going to look like.
He can bunt.
Yeah, he can. I was encouraged to see that. Although the Dodgers' lack of bunters on this team, we know they don't bunt at all, but it is very, very annoying when you need to lay one down and you can't. Nick Ahmed screwed that up one of the at-bats in the Pirates series.
Yeah,
but I wonder how they're going to shake this up, because you got to imagine that Edmund's going to play at least, you know, a majority of the time in center field. Mm-hmm. He can also play the infield, but with Muncy back, you're probably going to have him at third. Lux has hit really well lately, so he's staying at second. You got Rojas at short, so Edmund kind of has to be in the outfield, and in which case, what do? You send Páez down, you cut Nick Ahmed. What do?
This is what's going to happen. First of all, I was upset with the fact that they already cut Ahmed Rosario. That they cut the wrong Ahmed. This just rubbed me the wrong way. Not that I'm saying that the Dodgers need Ahmed Rosario to win a World Series. Chances are, and we joked about it when they acquired for him, they probably were going to leave him off the playoff roster. But you got to at least see what you've got in Ahmed Rosario. When he was hitting above 300 and he's a platoon option in the infield, you never know if someone's going to get hurt tomorrow for all we know. So it should have been Nick Ahmed first. He's got to go. He can't bunt. He can't hit. We don't need him because we have Rojas, who's basically the upgrade version of Nick Ahmed, and he's got more of a leadership role. So Ahmed's for sure going. I think they have to get creative here with that second spot. You mentioned Páez is now kind of hitting the ball well, and it would just kind of be demoralizing to send him down to AAA. And as bad as he is defensively in center field, he's an elite defender in right field. So it's kind of confusing how he's so bad in center, but so elite in right when they're not that much different.
I mean, it is quite a bit different.
But you still read the ball in the air.
Yeah, like, but you are, I mean,
he looks like a first baseman trying to play center.
But you're the captain out there. Center field is a very prominent position, and you're going to want to put your best fielder out there. And it's a lot more ground to cover, and you are the captain. I feel like dealing with right field is a little bit easier. But again, I just don't understand how they can't teach him how to play the outfield better. He is an outfielder. It's not like you got Miguel Vargas out there who's lost. Whose natural position is the infield. This guy, Páez, is an outfielder by all accounts. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what they do with this roster and if all of these guys can remain healthy. But it is head-scratching to trade for a guy like Ahmed Rosario because you feel that your bench players aren't producing the way you want them to. And at the time, it was like, Chris Taylor was out. Kike Hernandez wasn't hitting. Well, now Kike Hernandez is starting to hit a little bit more. I mean, definitely in the clutch.
Oh, he's
Kike Hernandez he's is a hitting bust. A lot better.
Yes.
But not overall. But the thing is he's Kike Hernandez is going to be on this postseason roster because that's why they have him. So
yeah, he's their best bench player.
Exactly. So I don't know why you would give up a player to trade for Rosario when if you needed someone to kind of hold you over until these guys come back, you bring up someone like we've been talking about from AAA.
So we know the rosters will expand in September, and that's maybe when Chris Taylor will return because the Dodgers love Chris Taylor and they won't quit on him. He's their Brokeback Mountain. But this is what I think they have to do. And I don't know if it'll happen, but Jason Hayward needs to go on the Phantom IL. They got to fake an injury somehow because how is he going to play? He was their right fielder, and now Mookie Betts is the right fielder. they're not going to give Mookie many days off, I don't think. And if they do, Páez should be playing over Mookie or over Hayward if they're both at the major league level. You have to have Páez over Hayward at this point. So if Hayward is limited to right field because you've got Teoscar always playing center field, you can't put Hayward in there at this point. I don't think he's even logged an inning there. They've got Kiermaier and Edmund coming soon. So what role does Hayward have? I don't think they're going to DFA him because he's a clubhouse leader. He's Freddie's best friend. I think a lot of guys look up to him. So you just have to phantom IL him, I think.
Yeah. I think they're going to try and do everything that they can to keep him on the roster, which means that Páez is the odd man out just based on options. I think that there is too much with Hayward as a clubhouse guy, but if they phantom IL him, he can still be in the dugout. I mean, yeah, he can still be a player coach if that's what they really want. But in terms of the production on the field, we're just not seeing it. He is a good defender out there, but again, it's like, now you have Mookie out there and you don't need Hayward to play right field. Where is he going to play? You can't play him really anywhere. So the other option is to DFA him, which I don't think they're going to do that. That would be kind of shocking to me if they did that, but they can't carry him. There's no spot for him. There's no way to work him into the lineup every day.
Yeah. I mean, personally, I like Kevin Kiermaier more than Jason Hayward. If I have to pick one, I want Kiermaier just because of that defense.
Yeah. And the defense alone is gives him an upgrade over Hayward.
So we'll get to some questions later, everyone. Appreciate you guys tuning in, of course, but I think that's all I wanted to talk about with Mookie. We can get to the lineup construction in just a few minutes of what we think the Dodgers' regular lineup will look like, but kind of want to talk about Shohei Ohtani. So Mookie Betts has been crushing the ball with runners in scoring position, but meanwhile, Shohei Ohtani isn't. And I don't know if you've kind of noticed this, Jake, but more often than not, especially these last couple weeks, Shohei's not coming through with runners on base in scoring position.
It's kind
of
been a trend all year for him.
Yeah, and I don't quite understand it because on the year, he's an MVP. He's got 36 home runs now. He hit one tonight in Milwaukee to put the Dodgers up 4-0. Feel like we haven't gotten many games where both Mookie and Shohei have homered in the same game. So that was cool that we got that experience tonight. Definitely showed how potent the Dodgers offense can be when they have the big three MVPs in there. But with runners in scoring position, Ohtani's hitting .229 with just two home runs and a .687 OPS, which is very low and something you wouldn't expect when you look at his overall numbers in general.
Yeah, I don't know why that is with him, because it's been a trend all year. We talked about it in the early part of the season. I mean, he's just so good in so many other aspects of the game that you kind of overlook that aspect of it. But he doesn't really, I don't ever see him change his approach at the plate. Like, I don't ever see him with runners on shorten up or try and poke the ball to left field, kind of how Freddie Freeman does it, where he's just very surgical with the bat and can kind of place the ball wherever the fielders aren't. Shohei's kind of boom or bust. He swings out of his shoes, his helmet falls off. So it just seems like it doesn't matter what the situation is. He's going to be swinging how he's going to swing, whether there's men on base or not. And you kind of just live and die with it at this point. I don't think that they're going to change his approach to the plate. I don't think he is going to change his approach to the plate. I think this is just what it is. Now, with the way he's hitting, you can live with that. The other guys in the lineup need to be focused on manufacturing runs, hitting with runners in scoring position. That's been something I've been talking about all season with this team. So with Shohei, you kind of just you live with it because look at the overall production.
Yeah, and I wanted to dig into it as well because I was like, maybe Ohtani just presses in general, and this was a trend in Anaheim, and he carried it over. But nope, he was actually really good last season with the Angels with runners in scoring position. And it's basically the same sample size. He hit .317 with nearly 1,100 OPS. So just 2 home runs this season with the Dodgers, with the runners in scoring position. Hopefully Otani just goes on a massive tear. As great as he has been for the Dodgers this season, I feel like we haven't seen Otani hit his ceiling yet. He hasn't had that monster mash year where, what was it, 3 years ago, he hit nearly 60 home runs with the Angels. This year, he'll probably get in the high 40s, if I had to guess. But the one thing that is cool that Otani could be chasing is a 40 home run, 40 stolen base season, which was kind of fitting that he's doing that when Matt Kemp just had his special day yesterday. So we're going to kind of veer to the right for a second. Just thoughts on Matt Kemp and him getting his respect.
God, I love that. He, growing up a Dodgers fan, he was huge. I mean, obviously when I started watching Dodgers baseball, it was in the 90s. So I fell in love with guys like Eric Karros and Sean Green in the early 2000s and Adrian Beltre and all those guys, Eric Gagne. But I think once I started coming into my own and really understanding the game was when Matt Kemp and James Loney and Andre Ethier and Russell Martin hit the scene. And those were special rosters because those guys all came up together and they were amazing. And Matt Kemp in that 2011 season will forever be gypped of an MVP, especially since it came out that Ryan Braun was juicing. But despite that, right, you look at the numbers, you compare the numbers between Ryan Braun and Matt Kemp, and it's not particularly close. I mean, Matt Kemp just outshined him in pretty much every category. And so we all as Dodgers fans kind of expect, you know, or just kind of think about that 2011 season as his MVP year. But then for him to come back in 2018 and do what he did, an all-star season, he was one of the reasons why the Dodgers got to the World Series. He was unbelievable that year, and he had a resurgence. And so it made so much sense for the Dodgers to sign him to a one-day contract so that he could retire with the team that brought him up and he made his debut with and became a star here in LA.
Yeah, for me, 2018 personally was my favorite Matt Kemp season. I felt like he was playing with a chip on his shoulder. It was a reunion because they had traded him after 2014 in that Yasmani Grandal trade, but they brought him back. Like you said, he was an all-star. Nobody was really hitting for the Dodgers in the first half except for Matt Kemp. And then when he kind of was tailing off in the second half because he was near the end of his career, he had that run against the Arizona Diamondbacks where he had multiple big hits, I believe, off Archie Bradley each time, and then did have that home run in the World Series off Chris Sale. So it was just a nice full season for Matt Kemp. But Ryan R., who's more deserving of winning the NL MVP, Ketel Marte or Shohei Ohtani? Why is Marte even in the MVP conversation?
I mean, he's having a great year.
But nowhere near Ohtani.
That's true. Also, people that value stolen bases, this is the MVP race for you. So... but what Ohtani's doing production-wise is just you can't beat that, which is why I'm kind of bummed that Mookie Betts broke his hand, because I would have loved to see Betts and Ohtani kind of go at it, MVP race on the same team.
Yeah. And then to answer STREJKYYY,
how many
runners in score position opportunities has Shohei had though? He's had a decent amount. I mean, I feel like every few games he's got at least one or two opportunities with runners on, because the bottom of the lineup has done a lot better the last month or so. Mm-hmm. So him at leadoff hasn't necessarily taken away runners in scoring position opportunities. So it's going to continue to be the same lineup with him leading off, as we know. So I'll check in on the chat later. There's one more big thing I need to talk about, and then we can kind of just go in whatever direction we want. Clayton Kershaw. That name might ring a bell for most Dodger fans. Picked up his first win of the 2024 season today for the Dodgers against the Brewers, where he went 5 2/3 innings. It should have been no run innings, but Joe Kelly came in and had his mess, which we can complain about that in a second, but Kershaw looked great. He had six strikeouts, I believe. He was getting swings and misses. This is his second start in a row now against good competition. He pitched well against the Phillies. He pitched pretty good against the Brewers as well. I was panicked, not going to lie, after he got destroyed by the Padres. But these last two outings, Kershaw has looked a lot better. The slider's there. The curveball's looked as nice as the last few years that I can recall. Fastball velocity ain't all that, but he seems to be locating it well. And, you know, despite the shoulder surgery and him starting so late into the season, Kershaw's getting it done.
Yeah, he's still good. And he's so crafty. I mean, just the way he's adapted his arsenal. Like you mentioned, he doesn't throw as hard anymore, but he still has that wipeout slider to right-handed hitters that is just deadly. I mean, it just disappears at the hands, and it disappears, you know, at the knees. And we've never worried about Clayton Kershaw in the regular season. I mean, he's arguably one of the, if not the greatest regular season pitcher of all time. You could make that argument. It's just, do we want him starting a playoff game for us? We can't answer that right now, but I think overall, if the Dodgers get Yamamoto back, I don't think that you can have Kershaw start a playoff game. Oh, so then
I think you're wrong.
You want Kershaw to start a playoff game now?
Let's look at who they've got. Glasnow is a lock. He's their ace.
Flaherty
is a lock. He's their number two or number three, however you want to view it. Flip that with Yamamoto. There's your three. Who's the four right now?
Right now?
Yeah.
Well, nobody.
It's Kershaw.
By default, but we've got guys coming back.
Who's coming back?
It all depends on Yamamoto.
Is Randy Johnson coming back? I already threw Yamamoto in there. He's in the three. It's the four. We got coming
back. It's unfortunate what's happened to Gavin Stone.
It looks like he's
kind of burnt out a little bit.
He did.
So I'm still holding out hope that it might be Gavin Stone. But again, what?
I said, I don't think so. I think he's pulling a Gonsolin.
Yeah. I mean, I guess by default, Kershaw's your number four.
I think so. And and what happened, why it seems like it's more definitive now, is we just saw it on Saturday. River Ryan got a severe injury.
Yeah, I was there. It was horrible. I mean, because he started off the game making that like Jeter-esque throw,
mm-hmm.
falling off the mound, which is awesome. Former shortstop. And then just, God damn this pitching staff. It's just every year we just get hit with just the worst arm injuries of all time. I know we bang on the medical staff, but they, I don't know if it's the fact that they suck or we're not drafting the right pitchers or we're not developing them the right way, but it's just so frustrating because you see these guys and you're like, you watch River Ryan pitch and he was out pitching Paul Skeens.
Yeah. He was locked in. He was set up for his best start of his major league career. He was locating everything. I think he was at like 55, 57 pitches.
He was cruising.
Mm-hmm. And this happened. So we got the forearm tightness. They're ruling him out. Or they're ruling him out for the rest of the season. They don't even know if he's going to have to undergo surgery. So FML if that happens, because then we don't even have him next year. So I really, really hope they can avoid this, because he is looking like a very promising young pitcher. And I was going to say, like, prior to the injury, he'd be my number four potentially. There was a strong case because he just looked that good. But
here's the thing, though. Back to Kershaw, right? We're supposed to get Walker Buehler back soon. I would rather have Walker. If I'm choosing between Walker Buehler and Clayton Kershaw to start a postseason game, I'm taking Walker Buehler.
That's insane. Totally insane based off what we've seen.
Kershaw's had one okay start.
He's had two. And they were against good teams. What has Walker Buehler done this season?
Neither of them have done anything to earn a postseason start, but it's by default.
It is by default, but we have to deal with the hand we're dealt. And right now, we know the three. There is a good shot. I'm not saying Buehler's dead. If he because he's coming back on Wednesday to make his return. He has the velocity. He has a pretty good slider, but his curveball was shitty. His fastball was getting hit hard. Pretty much every, even though he was throwing 97 at points, he was giving up home runs. He was getting hit hard. Even in AAA, he's looked like pretty bad. His most recent outing was serviceable, but prior to that, Buehler has just been getting roughed up in every rehab start. So I don't know yet what's going to happen with Walker Buehler, but I am not saying he's dead yet. And he's the only one, it feels like, if someone's going to steal that spot from Clayton Kershaw, it's probably Walker Buehler. I would say he has the best shot of anyone. I think Gavin Stone has run out of gas. Personally, I would put him on the IL today and just give him a reset, give him 2 to 3 starts, but 2 to 3 starts off, and then see what you've got out of him because he was pitching so well.
I'm just saying, Kevin, when it was me, you, David, and my brother watching that playoff game against the D-backs, game one, we saw Kershaw just get lit up. I don't know if I can take another year of that. So I'm praying that either Gavin Stone figures it out or Walker Buehler comes back strong, because I just don't want to see. As much as I love and adore Kershaw, I just can't trust it. But the thing is that at least this year, it's not Kershaw is your number one starter in the playoffs because we didn't do ass at the deadline and we don't have any other options. At least this year, there are other options in the top three, so that when you're in the division series, you may not even need a fourth starter.
Hopefully, but you will need one in the championship series.
Absolutely.
So it would be worst possible scenario is if the Dodgers fall down in the NLDS 2-1, and you have to rely on a Kershaw or a Buehler for your season on the line to hope that you get it to Glasnow for game 5.
Right.
That would be absolutely gut-wrenching and nerve-wracking.
To me, it just goes back to just not doing enough at the deadline. It's like they got Flaherty, which was great, but they really did need one more pitcher.
I was personally fine with what they did. I don't know if anyone could have seen this injury happening to River Ryan, but this is what you have with Walker Buehler. He's got a 5.84 ERA this season, 37 innings, only 31 strikeouts. I don't know how you could say I'm starting him in a playoff game based off what we've seen right now.
No, I mean, no. And that's why we have the rest of the season to determine this. It's too early to make this declaration because A, we haven't seen enough of them pitching, and B, we don't know if they're going to hold up when October comes around. So this might be a moot argument at this point, but as it stands, it's scary.
It is scary. The number 4 spot shouldn't be this wide open. I thought Stone would run away with it. I thought maybe Ryan was an outside shot. I was hoping Bobby Miller could come back and
is he coming back at all?
Who knows? They can keep him down there as long as they want because he has minor league options. So he's a big question mark. But it's Walker Buehler starting on Wednesday, everyone. That's the plan for those asking in the chat. So we'll see what he looks like. But I'm going to issue an apology to Kershaw because I thought he was cooked. I thought he was washed. But he's looked good these last 2 starts. And as it stands today, Clayton Kershaw is your game 4 starter. Hopefully we get some better luck and someone can step up, or Kershaw's that guy. Maybe he steps up, but yeah, it's not as pretty as we were hoping, but we really need Yamamoto to come back, because if Yamamoto's not back, we might be screwed. That I think is the big X factor right there, is how does Yamamoto look?
Yeah. And here's the thing. And I've gone back and forth on this, and it's tough to criticize a team that has the best record in the National League, given all of the injuries that they've had, which I will keep reiterating because I think it's worth having that context available when we're talking about this. But I wonder if we just rested on our laurels a little bit too much at the deadline and didn't get enough reinforcements needed for this playoff run. It just feels like we are banking on too much to go right. And given the injury history to this starting rotation, especially this year, even in a vacuum this year, and it's been like this for the past few seasons, but even if you just look at this year, to trust that you're going to get Yamamoto back and firing on all cylinders and ready for the playoffs, that is asking a lot. It's asking a lot of Clayton Kershaw. It's asking a lot of Walker Buehler, which, you know, we don't know what kind of pitchers they're going to be. It's just a lot left up to chance, and that's what worries me when we think about the playoffs.
I just feel like there really weren't other options out there that would have moved the needle for the Dodgers. Of all the availability, all the guys available on the market, it was not that great of a deadline in terms of guys available. Look at what Crochet's been doing. He looks like Gavin Stone too. He's completely gassed.
Yeah, but the thing is,
and I know you didn't like Luis Robert. He's hitting like shit too.
Well, he's been bad all year. I never really liked Robert. They should have got Randy Arozarena. I don't know why they didn't do that. But I mean, there were a couple other pitchers that they could have made a deal for. I don't know what the discussions were like with Crochet. I don't know what the discussions were like with the Tigers about Tarek Skubal. I don't know what the discussions were like about Nathan Eovaldi with the Rangers. I mean,
Skubal, they wouldn't trade. That came out. It was just a hard no.
No, I understand. I understand that.
And then the Rangers decided to become buyers, essentially. So that's just poor timing. But he would have been great. I mean, I can't.
Yeah,
I'm
just all I'm saying. And again, you know, I know that that Artie Moreno kind of has his head up his ass and doesn't want to trade any players to the Dodgers, but there were a few players in the Angels I wouldn't mind having, like Renifo or Tyler Anderson.
Well, Renifo's out for the year, so we dodged that bullet.
Tyler Anderson?
No, Renifo.
Oh, he's out for the year?
Yeah.
I missed that.
Wrist surgery.
Oh, see you later, pal. Well, I'm glad that Muncy's coming back. But I'm saying, like, you know, a guy like Tyler Anderson, which we could trust in the playoffs. He did pitch well for us in the playoffs in 2022. So, I mean, I just feel like there was just too much left up to chance that I feel like if they just could have been a little bit more aggressive, you know, because they picked up Ahmed Rosario and 14 days later they DFA'd him. So what was the point of that?
They just wanted to get something for Yarbrough, I guess. But you know what they did pick up, and he's been sensational?
Kopech.
Michael Kopech.
I know.
6 1/3 scoreless innings, 10 strikeouts, just one hit. I liked his stuff, and he is the chosen one. He's throwing 101. He looks like a totally different guy, and I think it's because you look at Miguel Vargas right now on the White Sox. He looks depressed. He looks like he looks like Stitch in the rain and all that, just depressed. Meanwhile, Kopech, this guy looks like he's got a new life to him.
I know. I might have to eat my words about Kopech because I didn't like the move when we got him because he was literally atrocious this year. So I was like, what are we doing? But obviously the stuff is there. He's got a live arm, and pitching for a contender will change things for you. And I don't know what the Dodgers did, if they did anything mechanically with him, or found something maybe a little bit that the White Sox didn't see, or I don't know. But he's been sensational, and they've desperately needed him. Also, Evan Phillips is back on track. That's great to see. I was really sad, really, really sad when they brought back Brusdar Graterol and then immediately went down again. I mean, just heartbreaking stuff for him, for the Dodgers, for the fans. I mean, that really sucked. But I'm happy that they were able to get Michael Kopech, because you look at the rest of this bullpen and the Joe Kelly experience, don't love it. Don't love it. Hate it, actually. And Daniel Hudson's been great. Evan Phillips has kind of found it again. Alex Vesia. I mean, a lot of these guys were a little overworked for a while there. So adding a high leverage guy like Kopech has been great, and he's come through.
Yeah. I don't think Joe Kelly's going to make the postseason roster just the way he's pitched.
Can we end it with him? I'm so sick of it. if he didn't do that thing with Correa in the 2020 season, I mean, are we even talking about Joe Kelly? I don't know. I mean, he gave up that massive, massive grand slam to Howie Kendrick in 29. What has he done? Like, what has he done for us? Like,
he has one great moment that I can remember. And it was in the 2020 NLDS against the Padres. And I'm pretty sure Jansen just completely lost command of everything. And they brought in Joe Kelly with the bases maybe loaded or at least two runners on. And
I vaguely remember he struck out.
I think he might have struck out Tatis, but he definitely came through and struck out someone with a nasty curveball. And I think he got the one or two big decisive outs to close out the game. But yeah, other than that, he hasn't been all that. And I know that they brought him back last season at the deadline. He pitched well enough to earn himself another contract, but it's been a really bumpy road with Joe Kelly this year. And if I were to name you all the reliever options, he wouldn't be on there, to be honest.
No, and it's either he either has command issues, he either gets lit up, or he's hurt. And sometimes he does well. But it's like the inconsistency with him is just so maddening.
Don't care 187. That's a funny comment. He gave his number up to Otani. That's his biggest accomplishment.
BC said he had a 2.45 ERA in 2020.
But he barely pitched.
Yeah.
He pitched like 12 innings.
And he broke a window.
He did break a window. He was suspended like a tenth of the year because there was only 60 games.
Yeah.
And Manfred suspended him like 8 games because he did the thing with Correa. Yeah. But anyways,
no, I've had it with him.
I do have some beef with Dave Roberts, and I'm going to get to that in a little bit. But I do want people to get their questions in since we're getting to the second half and towards the end leg of the show. So if you have questions, chat, you want us to answer specific things, you want us to argue and debate, drop them below in the chat, hit that like button, and we'll get to Oscar Vargas's question first. Should they make Kopech the closer? Or does he take over the fireman role?
Seems like they're pretty content with doing this closer by committee, which has worked because they have a bunch of guys that can do this exact role. They either have guys that can close or guys that can put out fires, and they're kind of interchangeable right now. So what they've got working is working.
Mm-hmm. Dodger Blue for you. Does the league need a sanctioned substance to avoid all these pitching injuries, especially with keeping the pitch clock?
I mean, if you listen to Tyler Glasnow when he was still on the Rays after he got hurt post them banning the sticky stuff, he was saying that it contributed pretty clearly to his injury. So yeah, I mean, I think there needs to be some regulated thing because I feel like the batters, and I feel like, and I can't remember, I think it was Pete Alonso that came out and said that he was in favor of sticky stuff because it allows the pitchers to have better control. Yes.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes, the spin rate is faster and it's more difficult to hit, but wouldn't you rather have a pitcher that has more command of the baseball and not end up like Mookie Betts where you got a broken hand and you're out for 45 games? I think there needs to be some compromise there.
Speaking of sticky stuff, Walker Buehler hasn't been the same since they've gotten rid of all that. Just saying.
And he's been hurt.
Maybe the lack of sticky stuff contributed to his injury.
It's very possible. I mean, Tyler Glasnow did say that. So
just Manfred's just screwing it up for everyone. Okay, Javier T. What's your guys' opinion on all the pitchers' arms falling off? Just makes me think of Dumb and Dumber, where it's like, our pitchers' arms are falling off.
It's brutal. I mean, it's really brutal. And it's not just the Dodgers. I know that we're a Dodgers podcast and we kind of have tunnel vision and we're like, oh my God, our starting rotation is in shambles. But you look across the league and a ton of these guys are just out for the year all the time. And it's devastating because you want to watch them. You want to watch these guys pitch. And it's like, you know, are we ever going to see Jacob deGrom again? You know, it's like, it's so disappointing because the best pitchers in the game are going down. Spencer Strider out for the whole year.
McClanahan.
Dustin May, he never pitches anymore.
Alcantara, who is literally a Cy Young Award winner. It's a shame because, like you're saying, it used to be, for the most part, you'd be able to watch all your favorite pitchers on a regular basis. Now they just go down like running backs, and half the top pitchers just live on the injured list. And they're not short injuries. They're out a year and a half. So they got to figure this shit out, because I don't want to tell my kids, like, yeah, it was awesome to watch Emmett Sheehan pitch for the Dodgers in 2023, 2025, 2028, 2030, and then 2034. Like, that's not how it's supposed to be. It's insane.
Yeah.
Justin Yamas, did we face our future shortstop tonight? I guess he's referring to Willy Adames. I'm going to say no. I don't think Adames is coming to the Dodgers anymore. Alex Freeland, I think, is our future shortstop, who just recently cracked the top 100 prospects and is one of the highest rising position players in the Dodgers farm system. People are already comparing him to Corey Seager, and when you get comps to Seager, I'm all in. So I'm going to ride or die with Freeland. I think he's going to debut at some point with the Dodgers next season.
And obviously they didn't feel that way about Trey Sweeney. So it really tells you that with them giving up Trey Sweeney, that they have a lot of confidence in this kid.
All right. This is a phenomenal question from Ivy, and actually something that I wanted to talk about. So what do you guys think the starting lineup will be for game one of the NLDS? And who is the opponent?
Is this assuming we have Edman and Muncy?
Yes. They're both supposed to return Monday. So let's hope they're healthy. So yeah, Muncy and Edman are back.
Well, you got to go Ohtani, Betts, Freeman. That's locked. Then do you go Teoscar Hernandez?
I think it's Teoscar cleanup.
Yeah. And they moved Gavin Lux up above Will Smith. Now, Will Smith is kind of slumping a little bit, and Gavin Lux is kind of on fire. He's hitting well over 300 in the last month or so. So maybe you do righty, lefty, and move Gavin Lux up to fifth, or have Will Smith hit.
I think it's Muncy.
Oh, right. Duh. I'm stupid. Yes. It'll be Teoscar, then Muncy, then Will Smith, then Gavin Lux.
Mm-hmm.
Then Miguel Rojas,
maybe Edman.
It actually could be kind of cool if they had Edman ninth.
They could have him ninth, but the issue is, they could do that actually, because Lux is seventh, so that's a lefty. Then they could go righty, that's Rojas. Yeah, then Edman. Yeah, he's a switch hitter, so that would work. Yeah, yeah, that could definitely be it. I think that's pretty much in line with what I'm thinking. Lux has just been on fire, no doubt about it. He destroyed Paul Skenes. I did not see that coming by any chance. He had 3 RBIs off Skenes with 2 hits. The Dodgers that day were the first opponent to get 4 earned runs off Paul Skenes. So how about that? How about them apples? Our offense is looking a lot better, and we'll save some Teoscar Hernandez talk in a few minutes, but yeah, I think that's the lineup. And the opponent, who the hell knows who the opponent will be. I mean, I'm expecting the Padres to make it for sure. I think the Braves will find a way to just barely get in as a wild card team, and the way it's looking, Arizona's going to get in.
If we have to face Arizona or San Diego, it's over for us. I can't. They're gonna destroy us, aren't they? I mean, come on.
No, they're not gonna destroy
us. I have zero confidence against those teams. Because
what is this negativity?
Because they run all day on us. They have both of those teams have our numbers this year. And well, if Christian Walker doesn't come back, that could be huge for us. Is he supposed to come back?
Yeah. And everyone finds a way to come back against the Dodgers. So I wouldn't get your hopes up.
Yeah. We stink against those two teams. So I don't want to see either of them.
Yeah. This is what I hate, because it's like, we want to have home field against the Phillies, but we have to get to that matchup against the Phillies. So it's like, what do you do? Do you tank to be the two seed and hope you get like the Brewers and the Braves winner or something and just hope the Brewers win? Or do you go as the one seed and, yeah, I don't know.
I mean, we kind of own the Brewers historically.
I would love to have the Brewers, but every time I say this, I would love to face X. They beat us. So I can't even say this shit anymore.
No, I mean, here's the thing. Like, our style of play is boom or bust. We just got to get on board with that. We know that that's the case. I fucking hate it, but that's what this team is. So we just got to pray that when October comes around, they're hot and they can hit home runs, because if they don't, it's over. Like, it's plain and simple. So we just gotta hope that these guys can hit the ball out of the park in the playoffs. If they do, we're gonna beat everybody.
All right, I'm gonna try to understand what this question is from Alleluia One. Do you guys think Kike even matter? The lineup will either be good in the playoffs where he will barely play, or the lineup will disappear again and he wouldn't matter.
Basically, what is Kike's value to this team in the playoffs is kind of the gist of that question.
He's going to start against left-handed pitching, and he'll be the first bat most likely off the bench against a left-handed reliever.
Where they're going to play him at shortstop, probably, right?
I
don't know where else he'd
shortstop
play.
Well, Rojas is also shortstop. Second base, maybe, if they platoon him with Lux. I guess that most likely be it. Third base, potentially, if something's off with Muncy and he just doesn't look right against lefties. I don't know. But yeah.
Look, Kike there for one reason and one reason only, to perform in the playoffs. He's going to get some at-bats, and he's going to be there when you need him. So it's either going to be a pinch hit opportunity, or it's going to be a spot start, or, you know, takes over defensively, all that. I mean, it's going to be one or the other.
I forgot to bring this up, but my goodness. Thank you, Maria G. What is going on with this Will Smith slump? I mean, this isn't just a couple weeks. Since the second half, he has just not looked in good form at all. His batting average has fallen to .245. I don't think he has a single home run in the second half so far. These splits, he's 3 for his last 27 over his last 15 games. He's hitting 102, last 30, 188. The other day, he had a negative 15 WRC plus. His OPS was like in the measly 600s. What is going on with Will Smith?
I don't know. He seems to slow down a lot towards the end of the year. Historically, but this year it's kind of dropped off a little bit more severely than in years past. I just think that it's tough to catch. It's why, you know, really good hitting catchers are a rare breed, because the position is so demanding. And Will Smith has been an exceptional catcher this year. Defensively, he stepped it up. He throws out a ton of runners now. Mm-hmm. And he calls great games. The pitchers love him. And he's had an all-star season. I mean, he was an all-star. I don't know what's going on with him at the plate, though. It's tough. He goes through these peaks and valleys sometimes. But I have full confidence that when we need him, he's going to come through. I mean, I just feel like he's a guy that is going to be there when you need him the most. And we do need him to hit, because we can't have another, you know, Austin Barnes, you know, usurping of the catcher's role like he did with Yasmani Grandal. Like, that's just not going to happen. So we just got to ride with it.
Totally. Appreciate all your questions. Hit that like button if you haven't yet. If you're new here, hit that subscribe button. Let's get to Michael Negrete's question. Well, hold on.
Before you answer that, what do you think it is with Will Smith?
Last season, when he was in a slump like this, we found out, I think, after the season was over, he had like a rib injury or something. I think he was playing with broken ribs, if I remember correctly. I'm guessing he's hurt again. This just feels like he's too talented of a hitter for it to just naturally be a slump. David Peralta hit like shit. We found out he was hurt. Kershaw pitched like crap. Found out he was hurt. Will Smith, when he was hurt, he was hitting like crap. So my guess is that this is a combination of fatigue and an injury. I found it very sketch that they had an off day on Thursday. He played Friday. Then he had another off day on Saturday against Paul Skeens, I believe. And then he played the next 2 days. It seems like something's going on here with Smith. So from Michael Negrete now, I heard on Dodgers Talk, starting pitchers on the Dodgers are throwing hard on their days off in the bullpen. Maybe that's hurting the Dodgers pitchers with injuries. I mean, seems pretty like a logical correlation to me. Maybe these guys need to not throw so hard. Yeah. I mean, with Yamamoto, he was throwing the hardest that he'd ever done in his Dodgers tenure against the Yankees. His velocity was up like 2 miles per hour on his four seamer, and he was throwing like 97 when he was normally throwing like 95, and then he got hurt. So I don't know what the Dodgers' approach here is with their pitchers. Does seem like there's a little too much emphasis on velocity, and it seems to be backfiring on a lot of guys like Dustin May, Bobby Miller's down in AAA. Sheehan got hurt. Freaking River Ryan got hurt. You name it.
Yeah. No, it's a shit show.
Okay, we'll just get to a couple more questions. So, Dodger Blue for you. Do you wish Roberts, the whole team, would have done more with that bad call against the Phillies, especially after they threw at Lux? Yeah, we haven't done an episode, actually, since that incident. That was it Hunter Wendelstaff?
Wendelstedt.
That was the most bullshit call I've seen in years. And that's not even being a biased Dodgers fan. Like, what was that horse shit? There was no obstruction from Miguel Rojas.
Yeah.
He made a clear path to tag the runner out, and freaking Wendelstedt blew it for the Dodgers. And after that, they just fell apart. That Joe Kelly unraveled. Everything went wrong. And honestly, I think that call cost us the game. That was some serious BS.
I rewatched that play a couple times, and I'm like, if you were teaching young little leaguers or middle schoolers how to cover the bag in that play, in that scenario, you would teach it exactly how Miguel Rojas did that, which is to avoid the runner, get to the bag, make the tag, not impede the runner, not block the bag, and still get the out. The fact that they called that interference is just horseshit, because if they didn't call it, nobody would have batted an eye. You would have not heard anybody in the Phillies dugout say anything about that, because it looked so normal. It looked so routine. And you're right. After that, everything unraveled. It was disgusting to watch, especially because it was a great play just all the way around.
Yeah. So looks like we don't have any more questions currently to answer. So we'll probably get to our final thoughts unless someone drops a super chat or something really juicy. But so I have some issues with Dave Roberts and his bullpen management these last two games. I did not understand the decision to go to Anthony Banda yesterday against a bunch of right-handed bats. And I'm a big Banda guy. He's sensational. But when you have Anthony Banda going against Andrew McCutchen in high leverage, a guy that has historically killed the Dodgers throughout his career, he destroys left-handed pitching. I just didn't understand the thought process there at all, to be honest.
Already had a two-run homer in that game.
He did that as well, so he was feeling himself. You had guys like Kopech, even Phillips, who ended up having to pitch that game, Hudson, any right-handed pitcher should have been going in that situation. You had six outs to get because Glasnow was able to give you seven, and he didn't get the win because of Dave Roberts and his head-scratching bullpen decisions. So once again, I feel like Dave Roberts hasn't learned after all these years, and it's going to be another thing. Here we go in the playoffs once again. And then today, it's a 4-0 game. Kershaw's cruising. I understand that they probably had a pitch count on him, but would it really kill his arm if he had to get one more out to get out of that sixth inning? But instead he goes to Joe Kelly, and Joe Kelly nearly coughs up the entire lead.
Yeah. Two bad decisions from Roberts. Generally speaking, he's been pretty good this year and has weathered the storm with all the injuries and the bullpen being taxed. And ever since Yamamoto went down, the starter's ERA has been through the damn roof. So I cut him a little bit of slack when it comes to this stuff, but I agree. In those moments, it didn't make much sense to me given the matchup, especially the Anthony Banda thing. I did not understand that at all, especially when you need him against lefties. You don't need him against right-handed batters, and you have a ton of good right-handed pitchers in the bullpen. So didn't make much sense to me. What I thought was even more egregious in that particular game, because that was the game that Teoscar Hernandez got the walk-off hit, right?
Yeah, I was going to get to that.
Right. So my bigger issue, or maybe just as big of an issue, is the fact that we couldn't move the runners over. As soon as Kike Hernandez hit that game-tying double and we had a runner at second and nobody out, what the hell are we doing? Get someone up there to lay down a freaking bunt and get the guy to third and then hit a fly ball, because it changes everything. And
didn't he like pinch hit Nick Ahmed in for Kiermaier or something?
The other
like
way
that?
Around, I think.
No, because Kiermaier had the successful.
He put Hayward in there. I know he did. I know he put Hayward up there.
Well, anyways, at some point, Kiermaier had a successful sacrifice bunt. And then later in that game, I'm pretty sure Kiermaier came out and they had Nick Ahmed bunt and he failed.
Yeah. Do your job, but also don't go away from the bunt when you need to bunt. There's so many teams in Major League Baseball that still bunt and bunt well. Like the D-backs bunt well. The Reds really bunt well. I mean, there are teams that don't have the thump that the Dodgers do that need to be able to push runs across when they can. And in that specific situation, it's like you could easily win the ball game with a sacrifice fly and go home happy. Now, as it happened, Teoscar Hernandez bailed him out and clutched up once again. He's been amazing all year, and we should keep him past this season, which we've all been saying. So he kind of let Dave Roberts off the hook there, but while it was happening, I was like, what are we doing? We just tied the game. All we need is one run. The worst thing you can do when you tie it up in extra innings is send it back to the other team for them to take the lead again. I get that you're the home team and you always have another at bat. But to me, that was just craziness that they couldn't get a bunt down and B didn't even try in that situation.
Yeah. So, like you were saying, Teoscar Hernandez was the hero. So we're going to end the show with talking about Teoscar and then get to that miscellaneous question. This guy has just been the MVP of the second half for the Dodgers. I mean, what isn't this guy doing? That walk-off hit against the Pirates was fire. What a way to close out the series. In the second half, he's hitting .333 with a .193 WRC+. He's got 7 home runs, 17 RBIs. He took Paul Skene's deep too, didn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, he's just opposite field. He is just everything you could ask for and more for the Dodgers. And I mean, to me, it's a slam dunk to re-sign him, but obviously we all agree and it'll be an issue come the offseason what happens there. But let's live in the present. Teoscar has just been such a joy to watch. And I mean, where would this team be without him? I don't think we'd be in first place.
No, I mean, he's been such a steady hand at the top of that lineup. He's been healthy all year. He's been a godsend. And also just his presence in the dugout, the sunflower seeds thing. He just enjoys the game. He's embraced Los Angeles. Los Angeles has embraced him. He wants to be here. I can't say enough about the guy. He's been sensational.
Absolutely. All right, the final question then, Jake, if you have anything else you want to cover, feel free to say so or final thoughts. But Dodger Blue for you, making it fun for us. Favorite taco and burger spot in LA?
Well, I love In-N-Out, so I'm going to say In-N-Out. But if it's not In-N-Out, then I love the Apple Pan.
Oh, that's a good one.
It's a that's an LA staple in Westwood. Century City area. It's off Westwood, Westwood and Pico. I love that burger. And for tacos, have you ever been to Leo's Tacos? There's a few locations, but it's like a taco truck.
Yes.
The one I've been to is on South La Brea. And a lot of Dodgers fans go there after games. One of my good friends, Jacob Moss, showed me that spot. He's a huge Dodgers fan. And so, just really, really good tacos.
Okay. Yeah. I've been to Leo's. I don't normally think about what my favorite taco is. I like tacos, but it's not my go-to, but West Adams has a pretty good place called B Taqueria, and I would highly recommend that. They have really flavorful and authentic and fun tacos, so I'm going to go with that. More of a burrito guy, but B Taqueria. And then burger for the win. Have you been there?
Oh, for the win? Yeah. I thought you were going to give me a name after thing.
They're called For the Win because they're the win.
I've never even heard of that.
Oh, shit. Well, you're missing out because people are raving about it like Shohei Ohtani. I'm not going to lie. And that's not even an exaggeration. They've got one in the Grand Central Market in downtown LA. They've got one, I think, on the west side now.
They do? They have one. Looks like they have. Oh, look at this. Yeah, they've got Hollywood, Grand Central Market, Van Nuys, Glendale.
So maybe not West Side.
West LA. Sepulveda and Pico.
That's the location?
Yeah.
Okay, so they do have one on the West Side.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I thought so. Highly recommend. It's a smash burger. Some people are upset that smash burgers are the new popular burger, but personally, I love smash burgers better than that fat patty shit that you might get at McDonald's. So for the win, great fries, great burgers. Check it out. I will put my name on the line that you'll like it.
This is an odd location on the West Side, but I apparently drive by it all the time. Cause I do drive around this area. So I had never seen it.
I don't recommend bad food places. So there you go, people. Jake, anything else?
Here are my final thoughts. I'm actually kind of glad that the Padres and the Diamondbacks have stepped up their game. I mean, both the Padres and the Diamondbacks are 8 for their last 10. We're 7 for our last 10, or we've won 7 of our last 10. They've won 8 of their last 10. And they're both tied for second, and they're 3.5 out of the NL West. I like that they're close because it will lock. Hopefully it'll lock this team in down the stretch. That's been kind of our problem, I think, in a lot of ways, where we just coast the entire season all the way through September, and then October comes around and it's just like they can't get up, they can't get hot. So I actually kind of like that the Diamondbacks and the Padres are breathing down our necks and that we have to keep winning in order to stay afloat. So I think that that's actually a really good thing for this team.
I agree with you 100%. I've been tired of these cakewalks to the NOS title and nothing to play for. And then we just get completely steamrolled in the first round, or the NLDS, I guess, technically. Yeah. I'm going to kind of be on the same line with you, but just some general quick MLB takes. Jackson Merrill is sensational. This guy is awesome for the Padres. And he looks like the real deal. He might end up being better than Fernando Tatis Jr. just the way he's swinging and defensively out there. So they've got a diamond out there in San Diego. Blake Snell all of a sudden is pitching his ass off for the Giants. And the Dodgers were actually one of the teams that checked in on him at the trade deadline. But obviously the Giants were going to trade him to us. Or if they were, it'd be an arm, a leg, and a head. But Blake Snell seems to have turned it around. And the Giants... they're above 500, so they're not quite dead yet. And then lastly,
they're kind of in the wild card hunt a little.
Exactly. And then, lastly, the Chicago White Sox are so bad. I don't know if they can do it, but they might end up with the worst record of all time. Isn't that possible?
Yeah, they're absolute trash.
All right, so we'll take out the trash here. So thank you guys for tuning in. Hit that like button. If you're listening on the audio feed, be a subscriber, leave a 5-star review. And I don't know when we'll be back, but if something exciting happens in the next few days, you'll hear from us. Otherwise, maybe next week. But the Incline Dodgers here is to provide Dodgers coverage for you all season long. And thank you guys in the chat for making it fun. Me and Jake are going to peace out now. So go Dodgers.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.